How many are watching the Olympics at all? Some. I had recorded a bunch of them thinking I'd just fast forward and watch them, but then I don't know what I did, but it recorded like, it filled up our recorder. So I spent like 10 minutes just deleting a bunch because I'm never going to watch these. But something that I'm always amazed at is just, you know, you get to that level of athleticism and it's just, I heard somebody say this and I think they're right. It would be fun to watch a regular person run or play, or wouldn't it? Because you're watching all these elite athletes from all these other countries and, you know, obviously they're hopefully close to the same level. But if just a normal person were there, then you would have a better picture of even how good they really are. But I was at the gym the other day, and it was kind of comical because I go to this Planet Fitness, and you're not supposed to have trainers there, but there was a trainer there working with some guy, and he was just all over him, berating him and telling him, oh, a little girl could lift that. Come on, give me one more. And I was just laughing because this poor guy was working so hard, you know, and it's good. I mean, he was working hard, and he was probably achieving more than he would have on his own. He needed that kind of motivation. And I think there's times where we do, all of us do, but what was funny is, you know, the guy who was, he was working out, and then the trainer looks like this, you know, Adonis. I mean, he looks like he's sculpted out of marble or something. And then I'm watching this guy working with him. I was just trying to think, I wonder what it would take for him to really look like this guy. You know, because that's what he's doing. He wants to be this guy. And then it reminded me, I'd heard about this happening, and so I looked it up. And there's this trainer, I need to get his name, because I had heard about this, but then I never saw any pictures. There's a guy named Drew Manning. Has anybody of you heard of him? He's a trainer. While I was researching him, I found out there's actually 260,000 licensed personal trainers in the United States right now. I mean, who knew? And I don't even know if that's a lot or not. I don't even know. But this guy, he was tired of his clients telling him things like, well, it's easy for you, you're already in shape. Or, I'll never be like you because you were probably born that way. So here's what he did. He stopped working out. He did no exercise for 7 months. Or 6 months, suspended all exercise. By 5 months, he'd already raised his blood pressure where his doctor was begging him to stop doing this. And he put on, in that time, 70 pounds. And here's his goal. And he wrote a book, and he's made a lot of money. He's been on a lot of talk shows. But what he did is he put on 70 pounds, and then he worked it off to inspire and show his clients that it's possible. So here's a picture of him, what he looks like all fit, and here's what he looked like in 6 months. Yeah, you never thought you'd come to church and see a man's chest like that probably. But and then what he did is reversed it. He reversed the whole process then, and then got back to looking like this. So as to be an inspiration. And as I was reading, it looks like he's done it once before, because he did all this, I think in 2011 originally, and it looks like he's going to do it again. I don't know what that does to your body. That has to be really, really tough on your body, I would think. But here's the thing. As I was watching that guy at the gym and just kind of chuckling about the whole thing, I got to thinking about how we are as people. There's a lot of times where what we do is we have these certain things that we're really good at, and then we tend to judge other people by that. I mean, we like to feel good about ourselves, so let's not look at that anymore. We tend to compare our strengths to the weaknesses of others. And then the gap that's there, we feel all good about ourselves, don't we? I mean, we're not usually comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. We're comparing what we're good at to something they're not good at. And it's kind of, sadly, it's human nature, I guess, but in that gap is where we feel good about ourselves, we kind of get life there, and we may even, you know, feel a little power over somebody. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but maybe you have a techie kind of friend, and that friend laughs at you because you can't get your computer to work. And then when they're helping you, they're like, well, it's really easy, watch. You know, and as they're typing away, you're like, well, slow down, let me see what you're doing so I can do it next time. And then they fix it, and they're like, it's done, it's easy. Well, it's easy for them. And then they feel all smart and you feel silly. And there's probably something you're good at that they're not good at, but you know, you don't get an opportunity to say, well, hey, let's go run a mile or whatever it is you're good at. It's funny how that works, though. We do the same thing. I mean, I've known other people who are really, you know, good at math, or maybe your naturally thin friend orders extra fries right in front of you or something. I don't know. Here's what's sad. That tendency that we have, unfortunately, it's also crept its way into the church at times, and even into religious systems. And we do it a little differently in religious systems. And let me make it a little less threatening. I'm not talking about our church or even the Assemblies of God, really. I'm just talking about churches in general or even religion in general. But one thing that I've noticed about religious systems that we do really good is we make rules. You notice that? Because it's too hard to think about the nuances and the in-betweens and discuss and develop discernment. So it's easier just to make a hard and fast rule. And then there's a line that we like lines. And what do? If we don't have enough, we just make more. That's what we do. And then the gap between the rules and then other people's behavior, that little gap right there, we get life there. We feel superior. We feel like we're better than them because we do well there following that rule and they don't. I thought of that, you know, not necessarily in the religious system, but just I have a really good friend back in San Diego who we met after college, and he already had his own business, and he was doing whatever. And I remember one time we had stopped by his dad's house, and introduced me to his dad. And then he said his dad taught special ed at the high school he went to. And he goes, "Yeah, I had him for all my classes." I thought he was joking. And as we walked out, turns out he was dyslexic and he had all these limitations. This guy's like a millionaire today because he was smart in a different way. But I know how, you know, people who just, you know, maybe they're good at taking tests or learning the way the system's set up. Well, we do it in the church. And it's sad because I remember even as a kid, there are times where someone would say, you know, "What church do you go to?" And I might tell them the name, and then they may not be familiar with the name. So they say, "Well, what kind of church is that?" And what would I say? "Well, we don't do this, we don't do this, we don't do this, we don't." It's sad, isn't it? Because I didn't describe what we are by saying, well, we love people and we accept people and we bring them to Jesus and Jesus changes them. And I mean, there's so many good things I could have said, but that's not really what my mindset was at the time. It was more about that gap. We got these rules and we follow them and you probably don't, and I'm better than you because of that. Sad how that works. So I got to thinking that in most religious systems or churches, I guess, Jesus is kind of like that personal trainer in a way, isn't he? I mean, not really. We see him that way. He's not really like that, but we see him that way. And it's almost as if he's saying, if you could follow the rules better and push a little more weight and be more like me, then you'd be better. And there starts to develop this gap between our behavior and our actions and what we see Jesus as, who he is and what he's trying to accomplish. I know Jesus would never do this, but I was just visualizing that guy and the way he was kind of mocking this poor guy trying to lift. Because the guy was down on his back benching, so the guy was down in his ear, like, so no one could tell he was training when he's not supposed to be doing that. And he's like, "Come on, I know you can get one more. A girl could get one more." Just looking at him like, wow, that is so juvenile. But if Jesus was kind of like that, it would be like he would be saying, you need to follow the rules better and you need to try harder and you need to be more like me. And to be more like me means you need to do this and this and this and this. As if he's pushing us harder and harder and harder to perform better and better and better and to go deeper and deeper and deeper and higher and higher and higher and faster and faster and faster. Here's what happens. If you listen to that kind of voice, if Jesus is more like a personal trainer in your ear saying to do those things, what's going to happen is you're going to start to strive for external success. You're going to strive to look right, but it's not going to necessarily be right. You're going to look for superficial victories. It's sad because Your spiritual life will then be all about external compliance, but no heart change. Nothing inside will change. You'll just look different on the outside. It'll be about appearances. And I shouldn't have done this, but I thought, this is a little sacrilegious, not really, but I looked online at Party City for $26. You could dress in the image of Christ. Did you know that? You could buy a costume, and couldn't we say you've put on the image of Christ? Still, it's silly, right? Because you would nowhere near be Jesus dressing like this or even be like Jesus. But in effect, that's what we do all the time. It's as if you could get the beard and the hair and look like the Renaissance or hippie Jesus, whichever that is. And the robe and the scarf has to be either scarlet or what? What's the other color? Yeah, blue. Right? So that's Jesus. But putting on a costume doesn't change you. All it does is make you look like Jesus, but you haven't changed anything. Here's the problem. Rules like that, all they do is lead to external compliance, behavior on the outside, but no change on the inside. It's sad because you can do a lot of things right and look a certain way and still not be any different. And we have all these rules that aren't bad. It's just there's a lot of things that we know we're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to go to church, and it's even better if you go twice a week. Or if you're really spiritual, you would go three times a week and volunteer, right, in one of the ministries. And, give the 10%, and then up and above, we'll have a missionary Sunday, and you could give extra for that and go to life group, or maybe even better, lead a life group or volunteer in the youth ministry. And if you were really following the rules, your hair would look a certain way, right? You dress a certain way. You would talk a certain way. You'd get your makeup a certain way. You'd laugh at the right things and not at the wrong things. And the problem is, you could do all those things and still, deep in your heart of hearts, know that you haven't changed a thing. And you could still feel hollow and not any closer to Jesus, even if you put on the outfit. You would just inside. What happens is the costume really becomes a disguise, and it just covers up all that's inside. Because you know what you're supposed to look like, and so you hide the things you're not supposed to look like. So you know as a Christian, you're supposed to come to church and be happy, right? So when you walk in, you look a certain way, and when people say, "How's it going?" what do you say? Great. Good. Wonderful. Or I remember this one church I worked at, people would say, "Too blessed to be stressed." Just make me laugh out loud. I couldn't help it. Like, what? What did you just say? Because we're supposed to be that way. And we're supposed to fake it, right? Because if you're really a Christian, you're not going to have any problems. You just cover it with that disguise and you hide it. And if there's a frustration, you just hide it and you cover up the sin and the compulsions and the pride and the failures. And sadly, but our Christian system almost helps make that happen, because you do want to put on your best when you come here. And you want to see people, and you don't want to be the one with problems, because everybody else's life seems so perfect. And these people here are all so good, and I know I'm not. And then what happens is that works against you even coming sometimes, because you think, why would I even go? Because if they found out what I'm really like, they wouldn't even talk to me. We even used to call it Sunday best. And I'm not saying we shouldn't dress up. At the funeral today, I had a suit on, and Larry Pine took a picture of it and sent it to me. I said, how come you look so different right now at church? There's nothing wrong with that. I like dressing up. It's fun. You know what's an interesting fact? They're saying right now, for the first time in human history, there are 5 generations living at the same time because of life expectancy rates have expanded so much. And I guess that's true. I mean, if you read it on the internet, it's true. But here's the funny thing about that. Some of us are old enough to have seen different generations of Christian put on the Jesus costume, and it looks different sometimes, right? And I'm saying that because whatever generation you're part of, or even this current generation, we do the same thing. It's just different. It's just a different costume. The beard's not quite as long, or maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe your jeans are tighter at the ankle. I don't know. Here's a weird thing, too. This sounds offensive, and I don't mean it that way. Just think about it for a second. The better you look in the Jesus costume, probably the more you're faking it. Do you ever think about that? Because none of us are really the same. That, and because of that, then our expression of Christ will look like him, but it'll look like us and it'll be different. But there's such a sometimes a pressure to conform to one image. And if it's not the image of Christ, it's going to be a man-made image of what Christianity should look like. I don't know. It worries me because the problem is if you're following that the Jesus, you know, weightlifter trainer guy, then it's going to be all about rules. And in the Bible, they called that the law. The law. And the difference would be if you're pushed to do the law and to follow the rules, then it's not really coming from your heart. And I've used this example a million times because it's just the one that hits home the most. It's like when my sister and I would fight and my parents would say, hug each other like you mean it. I never meant it, ever. I didn't. Do you see what I mean? You're pushed to do it. If you told me to hug my wife, that would be no problem. I'm drawn to hug her. It's different. The difference is if you're pushed to follow these rules, then it's an external motivation and it'll always be faking it. On the other hand, if all of that comes from inside and you're drawn to follow them, then it will be the truest form of looking like Jesus that it could possibly be. And what's beautiful about it is it will have a different expression with each one of us and our different gifts, and it'll look different. And when we're feeling compelled to help somebody, for some people their gift may be giving and it may be financial. For somebody else, their gift is serving and they're going to actually do something for the person. For somebody else, their gift may be communication and they'll give them a word that is exactly what they needed to hear from God. And it'll all be them motivated to help somebody, being Jesus to them, but it'll look different. It won't look the same. It's totally different. Paul said it like this, that the law and the rules were given to us earlier as a babysitter almost. Here's exactly how he says it in Galatians 3:24. Let me put it another way. The law was our guardian until Christ came. It protected us until we could be made right with God through faith. A lot of you have had children or have younger children. And you know how it is. When they're little, you've got to tell them what to do. They don't know. And they have to be, at times, made to obey. You're pushing them to do it. It's the law. You're their guardian at that point. Parent, the literal definition of parent means to guide. You're guiding them. There was a kid next door neighbor when I was young, growing up, like maybe even high school, I don't know, but there were some neighbors, young neighbors, and they had this little boy, he's like two. He was always in trouble. It was horrible. I mean, I kept hearing him. I'd hear him cry. I hated being in the front yard because he'd always be out there crying. What it was is he would just run in the street. I don't know what was wrong with this kid. He would just run in the street. Now, we lived on a cul-de-sac, so it was relatively safe, but the parent was trying to train them, and he would tell him no, and it was like this kid was just, I don't know what was wrong with him. He would look at his dad. His dad would turn around, and he'd just start running for the street, and the parent would have to correct him over and over and over, and I remember thinking, just put him in the backyard. And it was years later that I got to thinking about this verse and thinking about the fact that he was training him against the day, God forbid, that a car would come through there and he would have wandered in the road and violated that rule and paid the ultimate price. But here's the thing. As that child got older, he learned that the rule was good and it wasn't even out of obedience anymore. He didn't want to run in the street because he saw the danger. Do you see how it is? And when we're young in our faith, or if you have to be pushed into the rules, you don't mean it yet. It's still just a guardian for you. But now that Christ has come, it changes everything. And it's sad because we struggle with this so much that Paul, again, in the book of Romans, he says, what a miserable person I am. Who will free me from this life that is dominated by sin and death? And what he's talking about is how it's so difficult sometimes to obey because we need something to change our heart. I especially love this in the King James. Do you remember what it says in the King James? Instead of miserable, do you remember what it says? It's a word we do not use enough today. Wretched. He says, oh, what a wretched man I am. Sounds very Shakespearean there. You know what the law was doing there? It was showing our sin. It was showing us, it was bringing all of that to the surface. It was a guardian for us. The fact is, it illustrates that we need something else to motivate us to follow those rules, because we just can't do it on our own. And the thing is, when Jesus comes, he comes to bring new life, not a new rule book. He comes to give us a motivation to follow the rules. He changes everything. He didn't come and say, do this better and do it faster and run high, jump higher. That's not what he said. He said, I feel motivated to skip to the whole point, but I can't yet. You know, when Jesus came, he violated all the rules, really, if you think about it. He didn't come like we thought he would come. He didn't come as someone who was just coming to enforce the rules. And that's kind of what they were looking for. They were looking for a Messiah that would be a military leader, an economic leader, come just like that. And yet, what he came as is a spiritual leader. He came in totally the wrong way. He didn't come as a ruler. He didn't appear as a Greek god. He didn't appear in the right social class. He didn't have any money. He was a nobody. And he was born in a nobody town, in obscurity. He was born to parents who were criticized for having an illegitimate child. He was born to a woman who, you know, obviously had other kids later, but, you know, his brothers and sisters didn't even believe in him at first. And then when he was here on earth, rather than doing it like it seems like with the right way would be done, he wasn't a religious leader. He didn't go to college, but he knew the scriptures. He spent time with the dirty people, the common people, the sinners, the people that no one else wanted to be with. He touched the sick people, the lepers. He broke all the rules. He didn't demand push-ups. Instead, he sat with them and identified with them. And he built a relationship. And he built hope. You know what he does? He quiets the voice inside that says, I'm not good enough. He quiets the voice that says, you'll never be good enough. He takes away that internal push and desire for control and all the things that we struggle with so much, that selfishness, and he replaces it with a desire to serve. It's amazing. And it's not a costume or a disguise, he says. Paul uses this really interesting phrase. He says, Christ will fill our lives. That's totally different than putting on the Jesus costume. It's not like putting on rules. It's not saying I'm going to fake it or a disguise I'm going to hide behind. Paul says it like this. He's going to fill you. And when you're filled with him, you're going to act like him. You're going to act totally different. So in Colossians 3:16, it says, let the message about Christ in all of its richness fill your lives. There it is. Fill your lives. Teach and counsel each other with all the wisdom he gives. Sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs to God with thankful hearts. The difference is if Jesus was all about the rules, then he would say, why aren't you singing more? Why aren't you singing louder? Why aren't you singing better? He would say things like, how come you don't teach better or have better counsel? Or why aren't your lives more rich? That's not what he says. He says, get to know me and your life will be all those things. And you will have those songs and hymns flowing out of you because he's inside you. You're motivated to do it from the inside out. Totally, totally different. If it was about the law, then they would take a verse like this and it would be a grid and you would be graded on how well you do those things. But that's not how it is. Jesus identified with the weaknesses of the people he ministered to. He developed a community where there was trust and faith and hope, ultimately hope. We worship then not because we have to or we're graded on it, but we worship out of gratitude and we want to. Changes everything. I was thinking about it with the kids going to school. You know, our kids went today. I know some went last week and different days. And Nicole put a picture of them on Facebook, and it was comical to me anyway, because I'm like, Theo does not want to go. And the girls were smiling, but I knew they didn't want to go either. And I was thinking about this because, for instance, when I first went to college, I wanted to go, and I enjoyed it and studied and whatever, but I'll tell you, when I transferred and went to Bible college, my heart was all in. It wasn't as if it wasn't in before when I was studying microbiology. I love that stuff. But it was different. I was a little older. I transferred as a junior. So I went into school and I had to take some classes with freshmen. And, you know, some of the basic, like intro to Bible, intro to whatever. And I was eating it up. I was hungry for it. Do you see the difference? I wanted it. And I was, you know, a kid would raise their hand first day of school, probably like what happened today in schools all across the area. You know, and they'd say, is this going to be on the test? And I just look at them like, they don't get it. They don't understand. And it was sad in a way because I wanted to just say, do you get, you're sitting in a Bible college. You could be absorbing all of this. Yes, it's going to be on the test. The test is called life. Yeah. So study as hard as you can. Get every ounce of it you can get in you. And it changes everything. It's no longer about a grade. It's about how much can I learn and how much can I know. I don't want to just get by. I want to do this for the right reason. There's a difference. I mean, we all experience that. There's a difference. Paul, this idea of him filling your lives, I love how he words it there. It's almost as if Jesus becomes at home in you. There's another portion of scripture where he says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Dwell in you. And there it said, and all its richness, fill your lives, dwell in you richly. That phrase, dwell in you, oh, I went the wrong way, sorry. It says, it's really as if Jesus would be at home with you. Maybe you've done this before where you have someone over your house. And when someone's coming over, we all do this, so this is not critical of anybody, but you know how you do the cleaning a little different, right? You clean it a little different because someone's coming over. And you clean it a special way. And when they come over, what happens if they sit in your seat? You let them, right? Because they're the guest. And do you ask them to vacuum after or clean up? No, you do all that, right? You treat it differently because they're the guest in your home. I mean, it's different that way. And you may even cook them something special or... You probably, hopefully, turn the TV off so you're focused on them and not something else. You make sure that there's enough seats. They don't have to stand, right? We do all that. This has been a few years ago, but we had some friends over. And at one point, we're talking and we look over. Remember Derek? We look over and dude is in the couch, curled up with a blanket and went to sleep. Like, oh my goodness. And his wife's like, yeah, he feels really at home here. Do you know how big of a compliment that was? We thought, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's what this verse means, that Jesus would dwell in you. He would feel so at home in you. He's home. He's home. When that happens, your obedience is out of love, not any compulsion or force. No one's putting you up to anything. No one's threatening you. You do it because you want to do it. It's something that comes from within you that you can't even stop. And the thing about it, he's the only one who can change us that way. When he comes to dwell in you, he's the one who motivates you to that level. He makes that change in you. This may sound weird, but you can't do it yourself. You can't try hard enough to duplicate what he would do in you. You can't. You can't be good enough. You can't work hard enough. And we certainly have seen a million examples of that. And, you know, there are people who are desperate to please him and whatever. But the bottom line is, for him to really change you, it's him inside of you that changes you. So Dave, would you put some music on? I want us to just think about this for a minute. Think about that analogy of him curling up on the couch, maybe. Him being at home with you for a second. It brings a couple thoughts to my mind. One of them is, would there be any rooms in my house that I wouldn't want him to see? I mean, we don't do this all the time when somebody comes over, but sometimes people want a tour, you know, and there's that room you didn't actually clean, or maybe that's the room you threw everything in. You're like, not that room. Or that new room's not ready. Or the kids didn't make their bed. Or whatever it is. But we have those rooms too, don't we? And if you want Christ to really be at home, then he needs to be at home, like the whole home. Maybe some of you feel like, after we've been talking a little bit, that you've been wearing the Jesus costume itself. And you didn't realize it, but you realize that you were, and you were kind of just acting like you were wearing it. The fact is, he wants you to come out from behind the disguise, because you don't need it. You don't need it. You don't need it for us, and you certainly don't need it for him. If there's something that you feel like you needed to hide, then you should give that to him and let him heal that. Let him forgive it. Let him make it right. And you may need help with that. Some of those things he changes overnight, and some take time and need help. But he wants to change that. And I'll bet you that if you open your home, your heart to him, and he makes himself comfortable there, that you'll want to change those things, and you won't be satisfied putting a costume on anymore. That just won't work anymore for you. Let me just challenge us to do this. I want us to just spend just a few minutes in prayer here. It's early yet. I wasn't even looking at the clock here, but it's like 8:05. You know, the kids programs, they won't be done for another 15, 20 minutes. Certainly youth won't be done. You've got some time, I'm just saying. But again, I'm not going to force you to pray here. You got to want to for it to work anyway. I just want you to take time, whatever time it takes for you. And no one's going to judge you if you get up, because that's fine. I just want you to let him move in, take care of whatever needs to be taken care of. Let him curl up on that couch. Just thinking about that picture in my mind makes me chuckle. Let's just do that for a few minutes. I'm just going to close in prayer, and then it's up to you how long you want to pray or whatever. God, I'm grateful to you that you are a God who comes to us and invites us to relationship. That is amazing to me, that the God of the universe invites us to relationship. And I pray, God, that tonight you would come into each of our hearts and our homes and make yourself at home. We want you at home in every area, every room, everything, in the name of Jesus. God, we want to come out from behind whatever costume is there, and we want to live authentically for you, just for you. We pray these things in Jesus' name.